Call me old man Waves.
Damn you, old man!
Wait.
Old ass man.
Shut up, old man. You smell like fart.
No. Man.
Old man.
Wait. He's so old, he got a podcast on cassette.
Fuck, you're old.
Damn it, Wade.
And welcome to the Old Man Wade Show. I am your host, the God of Stubborn, the Lord of Laugh, the incredibly hungover Old Man Wade. And I'm sitting here with returning guests. Tell everybody who you are.
This is Rob Wolkenbrod. I am an editor and writer for Daily Mix of Fansided and a contributor of the San Antonio Spurs at Forbes.
Forbes.com. So I'll make sure I get you to plug all that stuff in at the end of it so people can find you and look for your writing and stuff like that. You were, and I said before, you were my editor at Bam Smack Pow for I think like a year and a half, maybe 2 years.
Yeah, nearly 2 years. Yeah.
So, so I want to talk to you about the NBA and how things have been just, I guess, wacky would be the best word for it. What's a story right now that you're like really shocked about?
I'm really shocked right now is probably. Well, I can't say I'm ever shocked by the Knicks at this point, but I am shocked by Dwight Howard right now with the Lakers and how he's coming around right now. I think that's been stunning. I thought he'd be gone within 2 months on the Lakers just because from the past few years with Washington, Atlanta, Charlotte, even his last year in Houston, he just dealt with injuries, teammate problems. His play fell off, and he was always capable of still being a fine rebounder, but now he's becoming a good shot blocker again. He's in shape, and he's becoming a really big player for the Lakers, which I can't say I expected.
No, I don't think anybody did. And he's in the perfect situation where all he has to do legitimately is just rebound, block shots, and then catch the occasional alley-oop from LeBron.
Yeah, it works perfectly. He doesn't have to be a key force, and he can just be a role player, and that's perfect. I think he's maybe 33, 34 at this point. He's a role player. That's fine. It will help out for him making the playoffs and maybe competing for a championship.
Do you think they have what it takes to compete?
I do, but I think they're going to run into the Clippers in playoffs. I mean, that's a really early playoff prediction, but otherwise, I think the Lakers have a good chance of doing well just because LeBron, Anthony Davis. But otherwise, when they run into Kawhi Leonard and Paul George and that really deep Clippers team around them, I just don't think they have enough around LeBron and Anthony Davis and hell, I guess even Dwight Howard at this point to make it last into the finals.
It would have been nice.
Now they're okay.
I would have been nice if they could have kept Boogie Cousins from getting hurt, and that may have been the one thing that sent him over the top.
Yeah, if he didn't get hurt, he could have been terrific. I mean, when he was playing with Anthony Davis in New Orleans for that, I think it was maybe a year, they were great together. They both averaged double doubles together. The Pelicans were looking good, and yeah, that could have been fun, but. Hey, it's the Dwight Howard experience right now. It's weird, it's wacky, but it's working.
Yeah, it's just funny. I'm a Boston guy, so I want to hate the Lakers. I will never root for them. But I also like LeBron James, so I really can't say anything bad about him. I'm an Anthony Davis fan, and I think Rondo's still there too, right?
Yeah, he's still there. He's been hurt a little bit right now, and his play's kind of falling off a little bit, but he's there.
Yeah.
He'll play a role.
Yeah, he doesn't turn the ball over often. He's one of the better distributors in the league. So, like, he's, again, another one of the guys who used to be a starting point guard who's now turned into a role player. And he'll be perfect coming off the bench for them, especially if he can activate, God, I hate this name, Playoff Rondo.
Playoff Rondo, yeah. Yeah, those days were, when you have triple-doubles without hesitation, yeah, those were something.
If it was a nationally televised game, he was on.
Oh yeah, he was a good player. And then once he left Boston for Dallas, it kind of fell off from there, yeah. I guess, or at least started to fall off. But in those big 3 days with Pierce, Allen, and Garnett, they're unbelievable. Yeah. It was awesome.
It was funny. I was watching the old clip of Rajon Rondo online, and he was just doing like a press day, and in the background you could just hear KG yelling, and he goes, how does he have this much energy? We're not even playing yet. He was like, it's media day. But yeah, man. So, how are your Knicks?
Oh God, they're a joy. I thought they would be. I mean, they started playing competitively in the first few games. I thought they were going to be okay. I mean, I never thought they were going to make the playoffs, but I thought, okay, 30, 35 wins is realistic. They're going to probably lose about 50 games, but okay. But then you see they start 1-7. David Fizdale doesn't know what he's doing with his lineups. Guys are getting hurt. Most of the roster is just not playing well. I mean, the free agent acquisitions that they had are, I think for the most part, they've been pretty atrocious. Even Julius Randle hasn't been good.
Which is shocking.
I mean, it's just been... I mean, and Marcus Morris, I mean, you're familiar with Marcus Morris from the Celtics. His stats are up, but he's getting so many just silly technical fouls. He's just controlling a lot of the offense when he really shouldn't be. And I think he's a perfect player to fit in on a contender where he can just be that guy that just does dirty work. This team, no.
I'm sorry, that's funny. It's just like, no. He might have been better off just staying in Boston, which is funny.
Seriously, I mean, he said his reason for coming down to New York was being closer to his family, which is, that's fine, but his role, his fit on this team is just not there, I don't think. If the Knicks are really going to be this bad, just start Kevin Knox. Why not? Just start him.
Is that the rookie they got this year?
No, he's a second-year player. He started last year. He played a little. He was a little rough in his first year, but now he's played a little more efficient off the bench. And frankly, if they're going to be this bad, why not use him?
Yeah, and it's funny because Fizdale was a good coach, but I just don't know. It's even the best coaches aren't going to be able to work if the players aren't really what they expected them to be, and if the chemistry doesn't work. So even like the best coach can't do anything with a mess. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, last year Fizdale had a nightmare to deal with, and he's still. I mean, some of his rotation stuff this year, it's been a little weird. Even when before Dennis Smith Jr. had his stepmother passed away, he played him minutes over Frank Ntilikina. Didn't make a lot of sense because Smith was just playing horrific basketball. Some of the uses of like Alonzo Trier, Wayne Ellington, just kind of off. But he's working on the fly. He's trying any lineup possible. I guess he's just going to see what works. I don't know if he's ever going to find it with this team, but. Yes, good luck.
Do you think he makes it the whole year?
Your mic cut out a little bit again on that. What'd you say?
Do you think he makes it the full year?
Think he makes it the whole year? Yeah, I think he does. After this year, I don't know. Because if this team loses 60 games again, I think they're going to see it as, all right, where's the improvement here? And they're going to maybe search for another coach. Who they're going to get that's going to be a replacement or an upgrade, I have absolutely no idea. And I'm not even sure there is an upgrade out there. They're just going to keep trotting names out there and see what they do. Just like every 2 to 3 years, because it's a cycle. It's a cycle with the Knicks. It's just normal. These coaches don't last. Even Mike Woodson, when he won 54 games, he didn't last.
What is it with them? Is it still the their owner? I can't remember his name, but it doesn't even really matter.
James Dolan. Yeah. I think it's just that it's partially him, partially the whole pressure that comes in. Oh, New York is this big market. We gotta win now. Oh man. I want this team to take time and. Do I think Fizdale should get a third year? As of now, I do. But I just think with that, again, the whole pressure of being in this big New York market, this big, mean, scary market, it just forces changes and people just get impatient. It happens. Same thing in Los Angeles. It just happens under the microscope.
You got any hot takes or any early predictions about anything that's going to happen this year?
Any hot takes predictions? I don't know how much of a hot take this is, but I have a feeling. I'm going to say Giannis Antetokounmpo ends up becoming. I mean, he's teased this the other night. Him becoming a really good three-point shooter as the season progresses, and just nobody going to be able to stop him whatsoever. I mean, he's already unstoppable now. Again, I don't know how much of a hot take that is, but I really don't think there's going to be a way for any team to stop them, to him. And I also think that the James Harden, Russell Westbrook situation is going to fizzle out. I guess that's more of a hot take.
It's scary because... It's scary because realistically, you look at Giannis and there really is nothing you can do with him. I described it one... I might have said it to you or might have heard it somewhere else. But Giannis is Shaq with a jump shot. Like, he really... Like, he's with a jump shot and ball handling. Because once he gets within, like, 5 feet of the basket, you either foul him or just move out the way because there's literally nothing you can do about it. If he adds any kind of range, like, what do you do at that point? Like, he can pass, he rebounds, he shoots a high percentage. Well, he shoots a decent percentage. He plays great defense. He doesn't give up on plays. Like, he's everything. Like, when you look at them, like, any generation, he's the type of player you want on your team. Like, he epitomizes, I think, everything that the NBA should be. Like, he seems to be, like, a really good guy. No one has anything bad to say about him. He loves the game of basketball. He improved dramatically since his rookie year, and I don't even think he's 25 yet.
Yeah, he's a young player, and he can do really anything right now. He's really capable of anything except that consistent jump shot. But he hit 4 3-pointers the other night, and I was like, "Oh my God, is this gonna happen this year? Is this really gonna happen this year?" Because it just feels like it was inevitable that he was gonna develop something and he was gonna take off. And he's teasing it right now, and if he does it, I mean, oh my God, his quote-unquote peak years, which is like age 26 to 30, 31, are going to be absolutely just mind-boggling what he could do. It's going to be scary.
Yeah, man, and like watching him do everything he's doing now, like you said, him hitting three-pointers at, like, you, because it's like, it's even more than what Kevin Durant does because he's a lot stronger than Kevin Durant. He's a lot more athletic than Kevin Durant has ever been. I don't know if Giannis has a post game, but at this point, does he really need one? I mean, if you throw a small guy, a shorter guy on him, yeah, Giannis could probably just, like, you know, turn around and shoot over him, which is, you know, and if you put a bigger guy on him, he's just going to run around him. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's... And then they started putting 3-point shooters around him, which is with like Middleton, Korver, Bledsoe's hit or miss. But you know what I mean? Like, it's they put something special together.
Yeah, really. And yeah, if Giannis can take this shooting step forward, I mean, who knows what the Bucks should be a contender every year for as long as he's there. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, I got nothing, man. Like, I'm actually shocked the Celtics took that one win. But again, it was like the beginning of the season. I was like, I don't expect... I hope they do. Don't get me wrong. I'm a big Celtics fan. But I don't know if they can take... well, then again, the Celtics are a better team. I guess a better team, like, in terms of, like... They kind of remind me of the Pistons in this, like, back when they beat the Lakers. Like, they don't have a lot of, like, really big stars. They have they're a unit. You know what I mean? And as the saying goes, the best player is never going to beat the best team.
Yeah, and plus they have Gordon Hayward looks good again. He looks really good again, which is I think their best development so far. If he can become the guy he was with the Jazz a few years ago, because this is what everyone expected last year when he came back and when he was with Kyrie was around and Al Horford was around. But now this is still a good team. This is a good team, and if Jason Tatum can become that dominant guy that everyone thinks he can be, and if Jaylen Brown continues to flash some good things off this huge contract he got, I mean, this they could go deep in the playoffs. They could make the Eastern Conference Finals. There's a chance. I mean, they have to get by Milwaukee or Philadelphia, which is going to be tough. But they have a chance of doing something, I think. They're good enough.
I'm telling you, the biggest acquisition I think this year was for Philly was Al Horford. That was a big move, man. Like, Embiid can get a little rest now because he can play the center. Horford can defend three different positions. He can run the offense. Like, he can post and every so often he'll like give you these like random feats of athleticism. And watching him dunk over someone, I'm like, whoa, this is like Atlanta Al Horford, man. And he stretches the floor and he shoots. He doesn't take terrible shots either. So I think that's the scariest thing about Philadelphia is them picking up Al Horford. But then again, like, what happens if one of them goes down? Because Horford's not necessarily known for playing 82 games a season, nor is Joel Embiid. So who knows what could happen if like one of them goes down? Then I don't see them making it far in the playoffs at all.
Yeah, I think even Ben Simmons the other night suffered some kind of injury. It didn't seem too serious, but yeah, if they lose any of those three guys, I mean, Tobias Harris is still there, but he's not going to lead a team. But if they lose Horford and Embiid for any certain amount of time, especially when it gets to the crunch time around the playoffs, that could definitely be a problem for sure. Yeah, then they'll run into Milwaukee, and that will create some problems. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move on to talk about a little WWE talk. So first off, I've been meaning to talk to you about this. That Hell in a Cell ending was.
Oh, God.
That was I'm sitting at home and I couldn't watch it. So I'm on my way to work that night, and whenever I get up to go to work, there's a pay-per-view. I scroll through Twitter to see, like, you know, see how it missed. And all I saw, I just searched WWE and Hell in a Cell. And then I found out what happened, and I was like, there's no way that actually happened. So I text a friend of mine. I'm like, what happened in Hell in a Cell? And he goes, it was the worst ending I've ever seen in my life. It made absolutely no sense.
Yeah. Am I allowed to curse on here?
Oh, absolutely.
This was some of the dumbest shit I have ever seen on a WWE pay-per-view, let alone a main event. This was horrific. Seth Rollins curb stomping Bray Wyatt into the floor, 10 times? Maybe more? And every time, and just going back and forth every time. And it looked like something like Roman Reigns would do, or John Cena. And hello, these are the people who the fans have hated over the years. I mean, Reigns and Cena did a lot for WWE, but these Superman heroically kind of things where you just keep going on and on and on, and they're facing someone who's more popular than them right now, and it's just like, oh my God, what the hell is going on here? What's going on here? And the crowd turned on immediately. It was the dumbest shit I've seen in I don't know how long. My God. Yeah, there's a rant for you.
Oh, man. let me tell you, if none of this audio comes out, I am absolutely going to take that one clip. Because that was absolutely well said and beautiful.
I'm sorry. I got to tell it like this at this point, because no longer am I a wrestling journalist anymore, where I got to keep it low key and professional. But now I'm just a general fan. Now shit was awful. It was awful.
And it was funny. Man. Someone said to me, like, the pay per view itself wasn't bad, but they said that ending was so terrible it like ruined. It ruined the whole pay-per-view. Like, that's how bad it was.
Yeah. It ruined it. I forgot what else happened that night. The only thing I remember from that is just Rollins curb-stopping him, and then the ending where the blood poured out Seth's mouth. And just adding on top of it, it was just the most theatrical garbage I've seen. And I thought WWE was starting to take maybe a few steps forward under Paul Heyman running Raw, the whole SmackDown and Fox era. I thought that was all coming together, but then this happens, and I'm like, what's going on here? Like, this is, they're trying to be edgy and maybe trying to push these, some of these boundaries, but this is another case of just not being aware of your audience. Your, have you heard your audience for the past month cheering The Fiend? And have you heard them not being so warm to Rollins? I mean, they weren't booing him, but they weren't really exactly cheering him. Now, I mean, it's bled into the past few shows now on Raw where the crowd's just not cheering for Rollins right now. They're booing him more often than not, and that's bad. If this is your main babyface guy, that's bad. That's really bad.
Is he their main guy?
I mean, well, maybe he was for a while holding the Universal title, I guess, for such a long time. Maybe he was just one of those guys, but now, I don't know. He's in a very dicey spot for him, how he handles himself out there and how WWE handles him. And right now, there's no sign of change. I mean, taking the Universal title off him was a start because he needs character rehab. But yeah, we'll see.
I'm calling this episode character rehab. I was trying to figure out exactly what to call this. Yeah, I'm calling it character rehab.
There you go.
So what else is going on with the WWE right now, man? Like, I know the last time I actually like sat down and watched was when Bayley made her heel turn. The heel turn we have been waiting for 3 years now, maybe.
Yeah.
And I loved, like, I'm glad I got to watch it live. A buddy of mine covers it, so he was typing it out, and then she stopped, and so he swiveled in his chair and he's watching it, and then like she pulled, then when she took her hood off, it was like everybody in the audience was like, it was like Deadpool, superhero landing, and they were like, and then when she like destroyed the Bayley buddies, I was like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, it was a sigh of relief. It's like finally, like because they all right. Well, backtracking a little bit, they messed her up when she came out of NXT. She should have been a huge star, but she just never became that. And then she just sat idly for the past few years now. Didn't have a lot going on for herself. Had some weird booking, even though she was a champion a few times, and she's never gained that crowd reaction from the fans. But now, with that heel turn, it was so needed, so badly needed. And now she's interesting, just like when Sasha Banks turned heel when she came back a few months ago. Now she's interesting again.
The best part about all this is that she looks comfortable. Like I catch the clips and I catch some of the matches, but I'm watching her like speak and I'm watching her like just, it looks way more like she just seems like finally like, it was almost like she shed this like old skin that she hated forever. And like the way, listening to her talk and listening to her like just the way she acts in the, like in the matches, it was almost like she had been waiting to do this forever.
Yeah, and like you see, I've read interviews before for years now where so many of these wrestling stars with WWE always say, I am more comfortable when I'm a heel, or I like better when I'm a heel, because you get those reins taken off of you and you can loosen up in there. You can be a little more personable. You can make all different kind of facial reactions and just have a little more fun with it. When you're a baby face, you got to tighten up. You got to put on the happy face. And you gotta be this heroic person where you struggle to get a crowd reaction because you become very vanilla. But now Bayley has this chance to spread free and do her thing and, yeah, unleash this side of her that she's never been able to unleash in WWE for, what, 5-6 years, including her run in NXT?
Yeah. I don't get it though, man. It just seemed weird that she, like you said, like they had the opportunity to like make her something than what it was. But I wonder whether or not putting the belt on her so soon was the thing that really like killed her momentum, because it was like in NXT, like they built her up, like, you know, from the ground up, like, you know, I mean, she lost a bunch of matches, but then she had to like start at the bottom and then work her way back up to a title. in a WWE, when she came to the main roster, it was just kind of like, oh, here's Bayley. Let's put the belt on her within like a couple of months. Like, we don't have a reason to care about it. Because most of the people aren't really watching NXT. You know what I mean? And, well, then they were. If they're not watching NXT now, then they're essentially missing out.
Yeah. Because, like, yeah, when they started with Bayley a couple of years back, yeah. And they've done this with other people, too. They throw a title on them. They think, oh, look, this is the hot new thing we're bringing up. And they just push them too far, too quickly. And that's part of the reason why WWE struggles to make stars now. Or they just don't care to anymore. They don't treat their booking properly. And you go over and see something like what AEW is doing right now. You have so many people who look like stars. You have so many people. And with WWE, you just struggle with that. They've just struggled with that for years. And Bayley's just one of the many cases.
And don't get me started on how they ruined Asuka. Like, that was, they had, a buddy of mine said she should still be champion right now because there's realistically no one should be beating her. Like, period. And then, like, they had her, like, lose these stupid matches to Carmella and had her feuding with Ellsworth. And then they did the Kabuki, and then, like, the Kabuki Warriors thing for a while. And, like, that, nothing came out of that. And now they're back to being, now they're champs. And it's like, okay, let's see how long this lasts before you ruin this, too.
Yeah, it just seems like a matter of time with these things. Even with The Fiend, it was just a matter of time before something happened. He was a red-hot character. Asuka was a red-hot character when she came up. And they normalize them. They can just normal any other person. They don't feel over the top like a Cena was, or Reigns, Lesnar, Undertaker. I mean, yeah, I'm talking about the biggest names in the company, but those were also a result of WWE pushing those guys like they were big-time things. Even Charlotte, they pushed her like a big-time thing. So it depends on how WWE treats these people. They could treat so many of them as just these bigger stars, and they could have an era like the early 2000s when you had Angle, Austin, Rock, and some other guys I'm probably forgetting right now. But yeah, if they've had so many chances to have multiple people being top stars, and they've blown it.
It's a damn shame. It's a damn shame because they had a lot. Like, even wow, this, I don't know what the hell's up with my microphone today, but you look at what they did with Ambrose. Like, he was, like, you know what I mean? Like, we've heard the story and everything that happened to him, whether it be true or not, but it was like, it almost seemed like they have no idea to do with someone that they haven't created on their own, you know what I mean? So it's like, oh, well, we have, like, they essentially created John Cena. They essentially created Roman Reigns. You know what I mean? And, like, what the heck is his name? With Dean Ambrose and now John Moxley, like, you know, they let him loose. And now it's, again, same thing with Bayley. Like, now that he's let loose, it's like, I can do whatever I want now. And now everything that you're seeing now is what the WWE missed.
Yeah. Yeah, and then eventually WWE, once they see these people getting a little too hot, they like to pull the rug back on them a little bit. You saw that with Rusev Day last year.
Oh, my God.
Once I got red hot, they pulled the rug right from underneath it, and now Rusev is in a cucking angle. Yeah, good old cucking angle. They tried it with Mike Kanellis, and then he won out of the company, so why not pass it along to someone else? Why the hell not?
Oh, I never thought about it, but that's exactly what it is.
It's a goddamn cucking angle.
Oh, man, I wonder if iTunes will accept that. Oh, man. Yeah, but again, Rusev should have been champ a long time ago. He was on fire. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Rusev was awesome for a time in that whole Rusev Day thing, and it was fun. It was, the crowd got along with it. But of course, it wasn't something WWE wanted to push, so they just took it away. Same things happened.
Yuck. What the hell, man? Like, Lance Storm, someone asked, Lance Storm brought up a quote, and they asked him how they felt about working in a cheating angle with your wife. And I think it was Macho Man who said it. He goes, they worked an angle like that with me and notice I'm not married anymore.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that. Oh my god. Yeah, that stuff. You don't get it sometimes. Like, I don't know why WWE does it, but they just love these weird, really weird angles that mix real life couples, and it's just, oh, I don't like it. No.
So you mentioned that, like, you mentioned, like, now you're kind of like off the leash, and you don't have to be as PC as you wanted to because you're not covering wrestling. Is there anything that's like, what is the hardest thing you've had to like bite your tongue about when you just, when like you've wanted to tweet something, even like you started typing it and then you were just like, nope, don't hit send.
All right. Oh, that's a good question. I would say when I was, I guess still right now covering the Knicks a little bit here and there. Sometimes with some of the comic booky and entertainment stuff here and there. Like when I had to cover Riverdale and Arrow. I mean, I was never able to establish a relationship with the CW just because I tried for press things here and there. It just didn't work out. But I still kept calm on that. But the next stuff right now, yeah, I gotta keep a clasp on some further things with them right now. Yeah.
Well, you bring up Riverdale, yeah. And I was talking about biting your tongue, but there's been a few times I've had to write in because you bring up Riverdale, and I have no interest in watching this show at all.
I stopped watching it too. Yeah.
So, and I remember there's been like a few times where I've been like, where I'll start writing an article and I just want to go, this is stupid. I don't know why they're doing this. This is like Wolverine, like hot claws thing. I was like, oh my god, this is dumb. I was like, this is terrible. Why are they doing this? And I was like, I know it's not going to go anywhere, but I have to be super happy and go, oh, there. And I have to think of some stupid way to make this sound like it's a good idea.
Yeah, you gotta try to spin it in some way possible. And just like, some of it's over the top, like Riverdale season 2 and 3 were just ridiculously over the top. And I'm kind of glad I don't have to cover it anymore.
Now you could say thrilled. You sound like you wanted to say, I'm thrilled, I don't have to cover it.
Yeah, because like, I mean, maybe I'll end up binge watching at some point when it comes up on Netflix at some point, just for the hell of it, just to see what went on. But watching it week to week, I haven't done that this season. I stopped doing it for some of the other CW shows. I'm watching Arrow right now, because it's the last season, it's 10 episodes. I'm struggling a little bit through The Flash right now, just because it's a little silly, and it's 23 episodes, it's kind of a lot. But in general, I've had to adjust tweeting things out, holding things back. And it's just the nature of doing writing and press related things and whatnot. That's just what you gotta do sometimes.
Yeah, man. what was I gonna say to you? I was gonna ask you something about So people have been telling me like Arrow just hasn't been like, it hasn't, like the last couple of years, it hasn't really had the same type of like, people haven't had the same enthusiasm as they have watching it in the past. And I've heard like The Flash has just like stunk for the last like couple of years.
Oh yeah. I would say from season six and seven were pretty bad. It was a struggle to get through them. I stopped watching Arrow towards the end of last season just because it was just not interesting. But now this season is off the charts because they have a shorter window. They're able to condense all the storytelling, and it's real stakes behind the series finale, which is fascinating. It's a great watch week to week. I've loved every episode so far. The Flash has been awful, at least the past 1 or 2 years. Yeah. I thought season 1 was incredible. I love season 1. Season 2 was good. Once I got to season 3, you kind of felt it's just starting to get a little bumpy. Maybe because they didn't know what to do with some of the character arcs, or they're trying out new things that just aren't working, or they're putting in too many different characters in there that are just too many cooks in the kitchen. And I think it's fallen to that a little bit. The Flash, it's been a little more interesting so far, but I think they're going to run into a similar case like Arrow, and my guess is they're going to end by season 8 too. In 2 years, you just reach that point where you can only tell so many interesting stories.
But it's funny now. On the flip side of that, with with Supernatural. They're on season 15. This is the final season. And they've had a few, they've had a couple of, like, subpar seasons. But even in those subpar seasons, there have been some incredible episodes and some terrific moments. And last season, I thought, was one of the best ones they've had since maybe season 5. The season 5 was a perfect, from episode 1 to episode 23. This season, I know it's like their final one. And it's just been... they're going for it, it looks like. You know what I mean? It looks like they're absolutely... they're going out. It looks like they're going to go out with a bang. I haven't watched yesterday's episode. Waiting on my wife to watch that one. And they've already done a few things. You're like, oh, okay, so you guys just don't care.
Yeah. That's what seems like an hour right now. They just don't care. They're just going for it. And it's fun when you see shows just loosen up and just go for it. It's cool.
Yeah. So I won't hold you much longer. Like I said, are there any final thoughts on the NBA or the NBA or the WWE? Did you watch the Saudi Arabia show?
I watched the end of it. All I saw was the with Bray Wyatt and Seth Rollins. And it was a fine match. It was okay. I liked the result. With Wyatt winning, I thought it was a little too late. In a way, but they've got some work to do with them. I think they're doing okay. But what I've really been interested in is this NXT TakeOver angle.
Oh, I can't. That has been so good. My girl, yeah, Shayna Baszler.
That's been incredible storytelling from, and it happened out of a fluke reason too, when they were stuck in Saudi Arabia from that whole flight issue and whatnot. It allowed the NXT guys to come onto SmackDown. A big stage, and they delivered. They killed it.
Yeah.
And it trickled into Raw, and even into NXT on Wednesday. It's the most interesting thing I'd say, along with the Fiend, that WWE has done this year. It's awesome, and I can't wait to see what happens next. Even as soon as tonight, for when we're taping this, as soon as Friday on SmackDown on November 8th. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually debating on just putting this out like right now. I mean, the content's content, and I may only put it on SoundCloud. But did they make up for that bad match at Hell in a Cell?
They make up for it? No. No. You heard my rant before? No. Excuse me. It was pretty bad. Yeah, again, what we said before, character rehab. Now they have to rehab Wyatt. They're doing step one is the title. We'll go from there with it. With what I don't know. Rollins has a long way to go. It's a really long way to go. And it's probably going to take him through WrestleMania to see what they can do with him, because they set him back for a long time.
Which I've never really been a Rollins guy. He's like. He's boring. I've always thought he was like kind of boring. I've never really like looked at him and was like, "Oh, this is like really cool," and I'm glad he's here. I've just kind of been like, "Eh, I can take him or leave him."
Yeah. Rollins was fine. I remember years back, he was always seen like as a third, like that quote unquote, like, or he started off as the leader of the Shield, but then you saw Reigns overlap him. You saw Ambrose overlap him. And they did a good job at Rollins over the past few years, I think, getting him into this major star level, with aligning with Triple H. The WrestleMania cash-in was really helpful for him. But that was a lot of it was because of booking. Rollins, of course, did things himself too, but he needs to, I think, step up, and he needs to evolve his character, because he's falling behind right now.
What would you do with him? Because I'm just wondering if there's anything that can be done. Because I don't really look at Rollins as someone who's, I don't know, like, what do you do with him? Like, it's not like he's, it's hard to really judge what to do with him, because he's not interesting on the microphone. His skill set in the ring is like, he's super athletic, and that doesn't really play well when you're a heel. I don't know if you can give him like a Brock Lesnar. I'm not Brock Lesnar. I don't know if you can give him a Paul Heyman to, like, you know what I mean, be his mouthpiece. You can't really give him, like, even when, like, you had like Benoit, you know what I mean? He would, you could always put him in a situation where he wouldn't necessarily, he would talk, but he wouldn't, like, he wouldn't need to. He was just that intense. Like, you know what I mean? You can't really, and Rollins isn't, he doesn't have the face to be intense. He doesn't have the charisma to not speak like Rob Van Dam could just come in the ring and just be himself and not never pick up a microphone and be that great. So what do you do with him at this point?
Right, yeah, it's tricky. There's a few different directions you could, I mean, there are, hypothetically, there are a few directions you can go with him, but again, from everything you were just saying, there's okay, but this, okay, but that. It's tricky, yeah. He's not a guy you would think needs someone on the microphone, or just is that you just look at him and he's like, all right, this guy, is he really gonna look intimidating with someone speaking for him? Probably not. It's tricky. I mean, you could turn him heel because he's been a face for a few years now, but the moveset, again, like you said. It's tough. A lot of it just depends, I guess, just on how WWE handles him as a babyface. How just changing things up a little bit, not having him curb stomp Bray Wyatt 10 times, or do these stupid things, or do some of these things on Twitter where he just looks like an idiot at times, or just not even an idiot, but just like, all right, just gonna roll my eyes. This guy, he's not looking too likable. I don't know. There's really no answer for it right now.
Yeah. All right. So before we go, tell everyone where they can find you.
They can find me at Real Rob Wolken on Twitter. That's Rob. Yeah, that's RobWolken. Or no, I just botched that. Real Rob Wolken. RealRobWolken. Oh man, it's one of those days. You can also find me at dailyknicks.com, covering the Knicks every day, and doing some of my occasional work on Forbes.com, covering the San Antonio Spurs.
Alright, I'll make sure I'll tag you in this stuff, because I'm going to put the episode out now, just for shits and giggles. I mean, why not? It'll come up right when SmackDown coming on tonight. Do you have any predictions for SmackDown tonight? I mean, you can get ahead of it now, like, you know, so I can go, ha, he said it here first.
I would love to say I have a really strange feeling that WWE is going to make a big title change with one of the NXT titles before Survivor Series, just to try and make it a little interesting. I know they're doing the whole brand supremacy, but if you want to really make things wild, you do some type of title change. I don't know what that is. I don't think it's going to be an NXT title. Maybe you play around with the North American title. And some people might roll their eyes at that, but you just have the NXT guy beat the WWE guy at Survivor Series or something along those lines. Whatever way possible, I do think we're going to get some type of title change before Survivor Series.
All right. Thank you for. God, this microphone. I'm gonna kick this thing across the yard. I swear to Odin. But hey, thanks for coming in. You can find me on oldmanwade.com, oldmanwadecom on Instagram and Twitter. Don't forget, if you find the episode, hashtag it. Damn it, Wade. DammitWade. All right. Till then.
Damn it, Wade.